You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. We're working our way through exit interviews from last season, breaking down each player's strengths and weaknesses, and looking ahead at what happens with them next season. Make sure to check out previous episodes if you haven't done so already. And to help me out on today's show is the host of Heating Up the UK, Dan Healy. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm really well, David. Thank you very much for including me in this series. I've really enjoyed listening to them so far. And yeah, I'm ready to talk some boss man. Let's do it.
That's excellent. Look, I've been fortunate enough to be a guest on your show a couple of times. So this is an honor for me to have you here on my show for the first time. So this is great. If you don't know, if you haven't been checking out Dan's podcast, make sure you do that. It is it is the premier Heat-based podcast in the UK, but certainly it's a great show on its own. And just regardless of geographical positioning, Dan knows his stuff. He loves his team. He's a huge fan, and it's a great listen. So make sure you do check that out whenever you possibly can. And as Dan hinted at, yeah, absolutely. We're going to be talking about Jay Crowder today. An interesting case here because obviously he spent half a season. It was a very successful one for Miami, and we'll get into the pros before we dissect some of the cons later on in the show. And then again, like I said, talk about what happens next with Jay. That's an interesting question because he is a free agent, but obviously let's start at the beginning. Acquired in mid-February at the trade deadline from the Memphis Grizzlies. And he spent the last few months with Miami playing 20 regular season games. And of course, starting every postseason game for the Heat. Wound up shooting incredibly well. Grizzlies fans still have not forgiven Crowder for how well he performed here in Miami. He spent just those few weeks in the postseason shooting almost 45% on three-point attempts. That was ridiculous. He was one of the most consistent scorers as far as three-point shooting is concerned, other than Duncan Robinson. And he helped unlock Miami's defense in a way that we had not expected. What were your takeaways from Jay's performance in Miami over the last couple of months?
Yeah, I mean, it seems crazy because that deal that happened in February, which was really billed as the Iguodala trade, and he came across as sort of the afterthought of that, along with Solomon Hill. And when you think back to, you know, Justice Winslow, JJ, and Dion all going over in that trade, I know Heat fans are very split on Winslow because we never really generally got to see that true potential and that true upside that he does have. But when you look back at it now and you think, well, those three players going out to what we got in mainly Jay Crowder and Iguodala, who started off slow but then got better, and then even some solid minutes from Solomon in the end, we turned that into three players that weren't playing into three players that made a huge impact, and nobody more so than Jay Crowder out of those. For me, I'm a bit like, I've got that Jimmy Butler attitude where I think that if you come to play, if you come to work, if you're a dog, if you want to, you know, just leave your all, I don't care if we pick up an L. If you can look yourself in the mirror and see that you have worked your hardest and you have given your all on that court, then you are fine by me as a fan. And when I watched Jay Crowder, especially as soon as he came in to the organization, those first opening games, he was just incredible in that sense. He spent half of the games on the floor, just grabbing every loose ball there was and everything else. So when I see that, I just think, wow, this guy has got it's like he had Heat culture already tattooed on him before he even stepped in. So that was my main takeaway of just how much, we can talk about the being an elite defender and obviously his incredible shooting that, way above his career average. But it was that dogged attitude that ruthlessness on the court that I fell in love with immediately with Jay.
And look, I think that's absolutely the right position too, because when you look at Jay and you realize, I mean, he's been on Miami's radar for a long time. He is he's not necessarily a local guy. He's born in Georgia, raised there, but he has ties to South Florida. His agent is just an hour north of the America Airlines Arena. So he has a house around this area. He's lived here for the last few years. There's certainly ties to the Heat organization, but moreover, he had a relatively cheap contract. He provides a service that Miami likes, a 3-and-D type wing defender, a guy who can stretch the floor, who can defend multiple positions. But as you hinted at, it was his fit immediately with his team that really stood out. He looked like he had been with his team for years, not just over the last couple of weeks. And he's helped unlock so much of what Miami does. Maybe there was an inbred familiarity with Jimmy Butler, going back to their days in Marquette. But again, I think it was just that kind of dogged attitude that you hinted at also that really helped him slide right into that rotation almost immediately, have a huge impact. And as you did say, it almost made like the Andre addition superfluous. Like he wasn't the key point in this trade anymore. Like his money, his contract was what facilitated the deal. But at the same time, it almost seemed like Iguodala wasn't as necessary to Miami's success as Jay was. And it was just such an incredible impact right away. You hinted at the defense. That's a huge part of it too. From being able to come off the bench to occasionally stretch the floor and things of that sort, to being inserted into the starting lineup and then forcing Eric Spoelstra's hand to have to sit Myers Leonard and change how Miami plays, you know, no longer going to drop coverage as far as their defense is concerned. Now they can afford to switch everything because they have Jimmy, because they've got Jay, because they've got Bam in that front court, guys that can all move around, switch, pick up multiple defenders. And it worked so well to Miami's advantage. People were not prepared for this in the bubble because they hadn't seen it all year. And they had the months of the hiatus to kind of work on this, to further, you know, include Crowder and Miami's defensive schemes, and it just worked so well. It just transformed this team to a much more intense, much more elite defense than what we had seen prior to the hiatus.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think that, when you look at, a massive tip of the hat to Myers Leonard, because we were a very successful team, and it was a very successful period whilst he was in the starting lineup. But for me, as soon as we made that change at the back end of the regular season for the bubble, you make a good point there about it took a lot of teams by surprise. They didn't know what to expect because they hadn't seen it. But that was for me when Miami became a sort of title hopeful to a real genuine title contender, when we made that switch to the lineup, because suddenly we had, all right, we lost a bit of height, but suddenly we had this, this natural motor, this fast, agile, strong, quick elite wing defender that as soon as that happened, it was just like a big switch that suddenly we looked like a different animal. And that was the main turning point for a lot of Miami's success going through all the way through to the finals, was that introduction of Jay into the starting lineup.
Yeah, I mean, you saw the trade play out, and clearly Miami had been able to achieve some success against the Milwaukee Bucks before, but that was the goal here, is to acquire long, versatile wing defenders and Iguodala and Crowder and expect them to be able to help build a wall. They were another brick in that wall and prevent Giannis from attacking the paint as often and frequently and efficiently as he normally does. And to see him take over as the main focus point of that trade and to be so well suited for the role of, again, trying to stop Giannis. You look back to that series, so much of Miami's success was the fact that they could throw Bam, they could throw Jay, the primary defender on Giannis Antetokounmpo. He started off on a number of key players. Even in the finals, he was tasked with challenging Anthony Davis somewhat, and of course, LeBron James. Well, I think Jimmy handled LeBron mostly, but Jay was another player that you can go in there and switch on to. It was just so good. Like you hate to say it as simply as that, but he just helped Miami, and you kept waiting for the other shoe to drop as far as the shooting regression was concerned. Eventually it did, but for those few weeks there in the bubble, nothing was as exciting, I think, as seeing Jay get a catch and shoot situation, be able to knock it down, and then again kind of complement that with some incredible defense.
Yeah, that was amazing. I mean, that those regular season shooting something silly like 45% from three. I mean, it was always going to regress, but I mean, my God, what we just didn't, expect that. We didn't sign up for this. You know, the Jay Crowder from the arch, everything was sunken down. It was a brilliant time, and it did naturally come down. But what a moment that was.
Yeah, absolutely. He was, it's just great to watch him. His intensity, his fit here, his personality, he was so professional, so again, just like it felt like he had been part of this team for a long time. And during those Zoom media calls, everybody referred to how well he fit in there, how he was talking to younger players like Duncan and Tyler, and just kind of getting in their ear a little bit. He had been on these deep playoff runs, maybe not as a deep a playoff run as Andre Iguodala, but still a guy who has had the experience, knows what to expect, was able to kind of mentor these young players, and his friendship with Jimmy really stood out. It seemed like such a great fit.
Yeah, and we saw when he was mic'd up as well, that we've seen on the footage of it, where, you know, what a communicator he is, and yes, you know, everything that he does, as you say, to just game awareness, to motivation, to advice to the younger players. As you said, just a perfect fit for this team.
You thought that maybe the loss of Myers, like that was his greatest asset for all the lack of mobility on defense. The fact that he's such a vocal communicator certainly made him a positive player for the most part. Like maybe on one-on-one defense, clearly there were going to be some issues there. But overall, he was able to help team defense because he was constantly yelling out instruction and he was so aware of what was happening on the court. But there wasn't a significant drop off as far as that vocal communication with Jay. And again, you had that motility, you had the ability to switch into a number of players. It was such a seamless fit that it seemed like I can't keep reiterating the same point over, but that's what really stood out to me is how well he fit on this team, how well he played, and how he helped Miami unlock another level in their defensive strategy. And then again, to continue to be able to knock down shots on a regular basis. So clearly that's what Miami needed, was somebody like that who could help switch onto a number of players, as well as Myers could stretch the floor, maybe even better than Jay was able to. I think that Jay's defense probably helped Miami even more than his offense did. While he was still able to knock down some shots, it was that defensive presence, switchability that really helped as far as Miami's success in the postseason. But unfortunately, there were some weaknesses there, and we'll have to talk about that in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat.
At some point in the day, you're bound to hit a wall. Mine usually hits me in the early evening after a long day of work and playing with my son. But whatever your wall is, Built Go is the solution. It's the healthy replacement for energy drinks without any of the fake additives, just natural ingredients that last. Built Go comes in 1.5-ounce packages that are easy to carry whenever your wall hits you, at a meeting at work, or to power through a workout. Just put it in your pocket and get through your day. It's the best workout gel on the market, and it comes in 3 delicious flavors, peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. But how does Built Go work so well? It combines energy gel with collagen protein that gets absorbed into your system quickly using vitamins, nutrients, honey, and just a kick of caffeine to help keep you going strong while strengthening joints, soft tissues, hair, and skin so you feel good and look good too. Visit BuiltGo.com and use the promo code LOCKED and you'll get 30% off your next order. So use the promo code LOCKED for 30% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go.
Stay up to date on the latest roster changes, rumors, and more by subscribing to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts. And always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. I'm here with Dan Healy, host of Heating Up the UK, and we're talking about Jay Crowder. We just went through some of the positives of his past season. There were so many there. Unfortunately, all good things came to an end there, and we start to see the worst version of Jay Crowder because his shot simply wasn't falling. And while his defense was still at an elite level, that's the nature of who Jay is. He is a one-dimensional player. He stretches the floor somewhat, but he doesn't do much else in terms of he's not a great passer. He's not a great playmaker for others. He's not quite comfortable putting the ball down. Although we did see it on occasion in the Orlando bubble. That's not a strength of his game. And if he's not knocking down those shots, then what good is he out there? And I hate to boil it down so simply, but that's just the reality. As we watch Jay towards the end of the Miami season, and when he wasn't knocking down those shots as frequently, he became more of a liability. And we even saw late in games where he wasn't always necessarily out on the floor, Spoelstra going to other players to kind of help provide some offensive boost, because without Jay shooting, again, there were liability out there, and it's necessary to kind of get more scoring, more versatility as far as his offense is concerned.
Yeah, I think that's pretty well summed up. And one thing that I noticed as well is that when you look at Miami's main strength is we play a hell of a lot of dribble handoff. In fact, I think we lead the league in dribble handoff, and that just doesn't fall into Jay's game at all. I think he was only involved in about 7% of the dribble handoffs that Miami lead the league in. And also with that is the pick and roll. We're in the top half of the league in terms of pick and roll basketball. He's not involved in that either. Under 3% of the plays that we lead is with Jay in the pick and roll. So yeah, you take away his shooting, I mean, it leads him to be a good floor stretcher. And when it means that he's knocking down those threes, then everything's well and good. But naturally, when that started to regress, as we've just covered, it was it means that the limitations are on an offensive end are exactly that. They're very limited because, you know, Miami have got a lot of great guys that are great at one thing or the other. Like, we've got some great shooters. We've got some good defenders. We're not blessed with lots of defense, but, you know, Jimmy, Bam, and Jay and Iguodala fall into that bracket. We haven't got many two-way guys. And that's what, you know, when you look at Jay's career, you feel like if only that sort of 9 points, I think he's averaging a game throughout his career, if you could get that up into like the mid-teens, then suddenly he becomes such a more useful player. But yet that is Jay Crowder. As I said, it doesn't quite fall into our system offensively with our dribble handoff basketball, etc. So we're lucky to have an elite defender. As you just said, the noticeable con on Jay's game is the fact that he just doesn't offer enough offensively. And once that shooting goes, which it did, as I said, you start to see Spo now making decisions to start looking at other people.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, you do want him out on the floor for key defensive possessions. But, you know, when he's out there and the shot's not falling, you know, it just, when you look at players like Goron, and to me, that his loss was such a huge blow to Miami in the finals because he was such a great scorer, able to make such a huge impact, able to get to the hoop and things of that sort. And I want to say it was against the Celtics, actually. You know, they're so good at defending the perimeter. And with Jay out there, like he was just not able to knock his shot down. And with Goron out, I think limited and not hitting his shot, like you could see how sluggish Miami's offense would get. And it just looked very, very, like it was so difficult to get any kind of regular easy scoring. And so Jay winds up becoming somewhat of a liability because he's not, as you said, a fluid part of that offense. He doesn't make plays, you know, from the 3-point line. He doesn't know how to work the dribble handoff. He's not sure how to get to the line. Even at this point in his career, he is somewhat one-dimensional. He is a great 3-and-D player. He is only also a 3-and-D player. And so for Miami, with the kind of movement on offense that you need, he's not always going to be a consistent part of that offense. And if that's the case, then I'm not sure if you're able to unlock the offense as much as you possibly can, that shot's not falling. And so it's uncomfortable. It's tough to say because Jay was such a great part of such a great deep run, but I just don't know how he fits on this team moving forward. And there are questions there regarding that because he does enter free agency now. And he's spoken about, you know, wanting some stability as far as his contract and things of that are concerned. But I guess from Miami's front office perspective, maybe we should talk about that in the next segment, because the reality is now they've got questions about, you know, what Jay can do and whether or not he fits with his team long term. He wants stability. He wants to get paid. And I'm not sure it's a perfect fit. So we'll address whether or not Jay Crowder should be in Miami next year. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. We're talking about Jay Crowder as we continue our exit interview series. And I'm here with Dan Healy breaking down the pros and cons. And now the tough questions. Jay enters free agency. And what does Miami do? So let's think about it. Let's take a step back there, because from Miami's perspective, it's not like you can, you know, players want to change. They want to grow over the offseason. Part of an exit interview is always the team saying, this is what you need to focus on. Jay is not that type of player in the sense that he's not going to be able to incorporate anything into his game that we haven't seen already. And you don't ever question his work ethic. It's not like you have to say, oh, come back a little bit lighter, lose a certain amount of body fat or weight or things of that sort. He's always in great shape. He always works hard. Again, that fit was perfect. He is the player that he is. And we all know who that is. And the team does too. And that's why when they look at him, it's not like they're advising him or having to say, you know, maybe this is a little something different that you can do to help fit better in Miami. The fit was perfect. Unfortunately, though, now that he enters free agency, they have some tough questions. And I'm not quite sure about whether or not his fit here is a perfect one. Where do you stand on that, Dan? Because I'm curious to see your perspective on it.
Yeah, I think that it's when you look back at when one of the things when you had Myers in the starting five. Now, bringing in Jay, as I said, that was a huge momentum shifter in the fact that we became a different animal. But one thing it did lead to, and we saw it no sort of more prominently than in the finals, is because now you're taking out a big and putting in a 6'6" player. Suddenly that matchup was awful because, you know, when he was guarding AD, it was no contest for him. He was just shooting over him. So when you're looking at a matchup like that, and you think if you're going to be, if this is the way we're going to play now, Although it had a lot of success, there was a massive noticeable difference when we was going with Jay at the four, with Bam now shifting at five, whereas we had obviously Bam at the four and Myers at the five, and we could, you know, that was a very successful time as well. So there's things like that to be considered. Now, when you look at Jay, I would love to see Jay back. There's no doubt about that. I think that we're obviously not going to do anything to compromise 2021. We know that that's the main goal. So therefore, what do we do here? Do we offer him the 1 year, maybe bigger payment, like a balloon payment, to get him to see him back? And obviously, he'll give us a lot of options. And he's, as we've already said, we know exactly what his pluses are, and he'll be very successful, I'm sure, once again for us. But does he then go for the stability of a longer extended time and a longer contract, for obviously guaranteeing maybe a bit more longevity and so on in a very uncertain time with cap space and so on? So does he go down that route? But then he's got to ask himself the question of, what does he want to be? Does he want to take maybe the more money for 1 year and be on a contending team? Because the days are gone where we are sort of treading water now. You know, the idea a year or so ago was, let's just get through to 2021. Whereas at the moment we are, those days are gone. We're a win now team right now. So does he want to be a part of that again? And if so, then that's probably always going to get offered, is the 1 year contract. If he's going to take the longevity of more years and have that stability there, then you're looking at, well, now who's going to take you? Because it's really only the rebuilding teams, like the teams with tons of cap space, like Memphis and Atlanta and New York, etc. So it comes to what Jay wants. And at this stage in his career, I'm not saying he's, you know, getting to the latter years, but he's in his peak now. If I'm Jay, I want to run this back, and I'll take the year. You're still going to find a buyer for you after that. It's down to Jay. Does he want the money, or does he want the stability? Does he want to win, or does he want to be on a rebuilding team? This is a guy who's jumped around a lot in his career. You know, he's gone from team to team. So now you're on a genuine title contender. What do you want to do, Jay?
You see, my point there, though, is that I think if he takes the 1 year deal, that will further expose his weaknesses. And that's my biggest, if I was Jay, that would be my concern, is I can't afford to take that risk, knowing that I'm certainly not going to come close to shooting 45% for a prolonged period of time. And look, if that's the case, like right now, he might be as hot a ticket as he's ever going to get. I mean, and I think league people know enough about Jay's instability as far as his inconsistency on offense and things of that sort, where they're not going to be throwing a lot of money at him, especially during these difficult financial times. But he might get a little bit more because of his incredible success during the postseason. And if that's the case, my feeling is that Jay would probably want more of that stability, because look, as you hinted at, he was traded everywhere. And what enabled him to stay afloat and stay positive was, well, I'm still getting paid. Like, he signed a deal with Boston. They traded him to Cleveland, the Isaiah Thomas for Kyrie Irving deal. Then he gets traded to Utah after that. I mean, he's had, and then again, gets traded to Memphis for the Mike Conley deal. So he's been moved around a lot during the course of one contract. That's incredible. And yeah. So for him, I'd take the stability too. Now, I kind of waffle on this a little bit, because the reality is there isn't going to be a lot of money available. Teams are going to be looking to recoup as much of their finances this year in the hope of getting to some kind of stability the following season. And if that's the case, maybe there'll be more cap space. Maybe there'll be more options. And I'm not sure that, you know, I'm not sure that teams would want to offer him multi-year deals. They might want to just say, look, all we got is a mid-level exception. And if you're going to take a mid-level exception from any of the teams around the league, why not just take it in Miami as well? Why not just take a simple one-year deal here? Prove yourself yet again. See if you can become a stable player. Maybe have some kind of consistency. And if that's the case, then maybe you've earned a long-term deal in the long run once Miami acquires Giannis or Victor Oladipo or whomever they acquire. So that's a tough question. But, you know, I'm also curious, do you have something to follow up with?
No, so I was just saying, what do you feel is a fair offer for Jay at this time then? I mean, what do you think that he'd be looking to accept?
Well, we don't even know what the salary cap situation is. So, like, we're all kind of playing around with this. And, you know, there's no season deadline as far as when it's going to start, or, you know, they've changed the date around. And of course, we keep hearing strategies being discussed back and forth. Players don't want to start until the following year. That makes more sense. but I would say that you'd probably offer him somewhere between 10 and 12. I think that's fair for a one-year deal.
Early double digits. Yeah, I think that's fair. Because, I mean, at the moment, I think that the contract he's on at the moment is very friendly. And I think he deserves more than that. But, yeah, I would say that that's probably your early double digits, 10, 11 million, I think is probably about fair.
Yeah, I mean, now at the end of next season, he will be 31 years old. And, you know, again, if he shoots closer to his career averages from three-point range, maybe other teams will be scared off and maybe there won't be another long-term deal. So, I mean, at this point, if somehow some team, and I don't know what team has the kind of cap space or a need for a Jay Crowder type player, but if some team offers him like a 3 for 20 or a 3 for, you know, maybe 25, somewhere around that deal, while it's less per year, I think he'd have to accept the offer, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so it's a big decision. It's a big decision. And you can't really blame players for taking that. Everyone's got some, as I said earlier, that some people will want that, you know, let's take the genuine, let's go again and let's see if we can get this title and go over the line this time. And I'll enjoy being on a contending team. Other players and fair play to it will want to take the stability and, you know, who's to knock that?
Now, I do have a question. I'm curious to see what you think about it. Can Jay be the regular season starter moving forward? Because we had this discussion recently when we were talking about Myers Leonard and, you know, on the show, I was curious about whether or not Miami abandons that policy and just kind of continues to lean into it. Now, we saw that it succeeded well in the postseason when teams were caught unawares. It helped with that mobility. I don't know that over the course of a 72-game season, you're going to continue to go to that defense as often, because it is draining, it is tiresome, it is hard to maintain at a high level, and you kind of want to save something different for the playoffs. So does Jay, if Jay comes back, let's say you sign into a one-year deal, do you lean into that same version of the defense that we saw in the postseason? Do you keep Jay on the bench? Do you try to sign another big? And if go ahead.
No, sorry, go on. Finish your question.
No. I mean, that's it. I mean, I just don't know what you do if you want to just do that. If you want to keep Bam at the five, do you want to play somebody? I mean, the bigger problem then is, if you get Jay or if you don't get Jay, then you have to look at other options as far as free agency or maybe a trade where you can find somebody else who can either fit similarly to what Crowder was able to provide or maybe similarly to what Myers is able to provide. Because I think Myers is almost certainly not going to be here next season just because he wants to, again, as he said, he wants to contribute. He wants to play for a contending team. And if that's the case, well, then it probably isn't Miami because they're not going to give him any kind of playing time. I don't think, even if they were able to go back to what they were able to do last year and keep Myers as a starter during the regular season, I don't think Leonard would want that because he wants to be able to contribute during the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, you look at Jay as a starter at the moment, it's our best team. You know, if you're picking our best five at the moment, then Jay Crowder's in there. We did also see it does have some cons to it as well, like the matchup in the finals where he's just too small to be in that position against bigger players. It's not even a contest for players like AD and so on. So therefore, you look at the who he could switch to, and at the moment we don't know who that's going to be because Myers Leonard more than likely isn't going to be here. There's a good chance Derek Jones Jr. isn't going to be here, which is another person you could put in at the four that's a bit taller and so on. So it then comes down to, well, if Jay isn't going to be your starter, and I do still quite like the idea of him coming off the bench because he gives you that energy and he gives you that motor and so on. So I quite like that. But then you therefore have to now go out in free agency and sign another big, because apart from Bam, you've only got Kelly Olynyk there. So who does that become? You know, there was some conversations about a mid-level exception and whether you split that between someone like Millsap and Wes Matthews, which would give you a bit of height. I quite like the idea of that. But it all comes down to, if Jay isn't going to be in your starting five, and I do like the idea of it's not being all the time. I think that when it comes to the pressure cooker environment of being in the playoffs, then you would then start to play your best team, and Jay is a part of that as it stands. But during the regular season, then yeah, definitely you now start to look at other options, and that needs to be other bigs, really. So who knows who that's going to be, because as you just said, I'll be very surprised if it's Myers Leonard. Kelly Olynyk can do a job there, but I think you'd have to go searching for another big in free agency.
Do you have a preference? I mean, you kind of pointed at the potential Millsap Matthews duo, and I do like that one as well. If I had to choose between that and re-signing Jay, I'd probably really lean towards Millsap and Matthews because of Matthews' wing defense and his ability to guard from the perimeter. I think that certainly helps. And of course, Millsap's work ethic would be probably another seamless fit here. What about you? Do you have a preference as far as somebody to play over Crowder if they wind up not re-signing him?
I think that I would agree with you. I like the fit of both of those two in Miami. I think the defensive capabilities don't go down really. So I think that you're getting a 2-for-1 there. I would probably lean towards that begrudgingly. But if not, then I don't know. I mean, there was some people talking about Serge Ibaka obviously would be incredible. I think that would be anybody's first choice there, but I don't see that happening. We're not going to take he's not going to take a 1-year deal, and Miami certainly aren't going to offer more than that because they're not going to compromise their 2021 on someone like Serge Ibaka, as good as a player he is. They're not going to compromise that. But I mean, that would be fantastic. Somebody of that ilk. Apart from that, I'm not really sure. I mean, there's people saying that they would take the vets minimum and give Boogie Cousins another go. I don't like that. Even at a vets minimum, I don't like that because I just feel like the guy has got no, he's just glass now. He's not played for 2 years. Even though it is a low risk, high reward, I would try and avoid that. But yeah, certainly if it's not going to be Jay, I like the idea of that split in the mid-level exception on those two players. Other than that, it's going to be slim pickings, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's no ideal option. So what do you do? What would you do if you were Pat Riley, Andy Ellisberg, if you were the Miami Heat organization? Because my feeling is that I would be pretty upfront with Jay and say, look, there's not a lot of money out there. You're not going to get a lot of options. You like the fit here. You loved being on this team. You know that we'll take care of you at the end of the day if you are able to play at a high level, but we can't offer you more than the 1-year deal. I think they're completely leaning in towards 2021. Everybody on this team knows it. And you just have to accept that. And if Jay wants to be a part of this team moving forward, he has to understand he's not going to get more of a 1-year deal. I just don't think you can do anything else, right?
I think you've summed that up perfectly. I think that that is almost identical to what the conversation is going to be. I just do not see Pat going any more than the 1-year deal. We can always go back again if we need to in a year's time. I just think that that's going to be the offer, and I firmly believe I'm confident, and I think that Jay will want to come back. He loves it here. The fit is seamless. He's a local guy. I just think that will be the offer, and I believe that that's what he's going to accept.
I hope you're right, because it was fun to watch him be a part of this team, and of course to be part of this incredible run. He was certainly a key component of that. And of course, the local ties and his connection to Jimmy Butler going back to their college days. It was a lot of fun to watch him. I think it also puts a lot of pressure on him to step up his game a little bit, to prove that he can be consistent even at this point in his career. I'm sure he's doing the work already, but he's got to do even more. Like, that's just a reality. He cannot afford to rest on his laurels from this past season. If that's the case, then yeah, he can go chase a deal somewhere else. But if Miami, if he wants to be here, he's going to have to earn it. And I know that's kind of tough, because he's proven it over the course of his career. For the most part, he certainly proved it last year, but he's got to prove it yet again. That's a big risk. And I've made this point before, is that he saw up close what it was like for Isaiah Thomas to take a friendly deal with the Celtics, hoping to cash in at some point in the future, and then have an incredible injury take him out of that, any kind of potential of signing a deal there. So for him, maybe Crowder has seen this up close and says, you know what, I can't afford to take that chance. I could get hurt next year. I could not just could I shoot 20-something percent from three-point range, but I could sustain a serious injury that would risk my ability to sign another long-term deal. And if that's the case, I've got to chase it, even if it's less money somewhere else. As much as I enjoy being in Miami, to me, the more important thing is going after that long-term stability. And so I waffle on this, because you made good points. He loves it here. He's a great fit, et cetera. But I think you have to chase the stability whenever possible.
Yeah, and that's why I wouldn't ever begrudge anybody doing that, because, you know, that is part of the game. People need to secure their own interests first. You know, that's the nature of it. They've got families. They want to, they want to earn as well. So I totally get that, and I never begrudge anybody going to chase the money. That's fine. But I feel like he will. Another element to this is the fact that if Myers Leonard, for example, is going, which it looks like he probably will, It's another leader. It's another veteran present that he can step into that area now with Jimmy and Iguodala and obviously Goran Dragic. I'm not sure what's happening with UD yet, but suddenly we're a little bit light on the veteran presence. So that's the leadership role that he can embrace as well. So I hope he stays. I think he will.
Should be great. And this was great, Dan. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show. Please do me a favor and inform my listeners where they can check out your work and your great podcast.
Yeah, so you can follow me on all socials at the Miami Heat UK. I also have my own podcast that David has been on a couple of times before. It's available on all podcast platforms. Also have a website called www.miamiheatuk.com where there's lots of articles and so on going on. I've only been doing this just over a year, this account, but it's been great fun. Made some good strides and will continue to grow with more content going forward into next season.
Absolutely. So make sure you go ahead and support Dan. And as always, make sure to continue by signing up and subscribing to follow the podcast to get the latest episodes as soon as they're out. Of course, I'll be bringing you the latest rumors and news from around the league and talk about the NBA draft. It's just a few weeks away. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.